The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 712. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about mining and moors and maritime history, fireworks and fossils and pasties as we go to Plymouth, Devon, and Cornwall in southern England. Welcome to Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Devon and Cornwall. I'd like to welcome to the show Ryan Duffield from Devon, who has come to talk to us about the city of Plymouth in southern England and also the surrounding area, including Devon and Cornwall. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Good. Well, it's funny because we just talked about the English coast, but we've moved a little further to the west and talking about a different region of the coast than we did on the show recently when we talked about Suffolk and the Downs. Why should someone go to Plymouth?
Plymouth, actually, it's a fantastic city. It's a city that's got this amazing maritime history and tradition mm-hmm. that dates right back to the medieval times, but actually it's quite often overlooked. When people think of cities in England, they think of London, Birmingham, Manchester, and Liverpool, perhaps, but I think Plymouth has got just as much interest as any of those cities, but yeah, it's just not as heard of as so much. And I think a particular note to any of your American listeners interested, it's also the city where the Pilgrim Fathers set sail from on the Mayflower right. in 1620 and are associated with the tradition of Thanksgiving. So I think that's a pretty interesting point. It's also surrounded by beautiful coastline. It's right on the border of the counties of Devon and Cornwall. And these are two of the most popular tourist destinations in the UK down in the southwest of England. So it's got lots to offer.
Well, and if we're looking for Devon and Cornwall, if we go down to the English map and you go far bottom left, that's where we are. And if you go further bottom, further left from there, you end up in the ocean. So we're
very much so. And it's right on the south coast of Devon and Cornwall. So you are literally facing out towards the Atlantic.
Okay. Well, and facing out towards the south.
Yes. Yep.
Excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
First of all, is obviously starting in the city centre. So the city is actually sort of pretty much based around the coast and its large harbours. Mm-hmm. So I would say starting there, you've got Sutton Harbour, which is the main harbour in the city. And that's sort of where the city spreads out from. And from around there, you've got all sorts of things to see. So you've got things like the Mayflower Steps, which is where the Pilgrim Fathers actually set sail from. And there's a museum there dedicated to that. You've also got what's called the Barbican, which is this old cobbled street, which dates back to the medieval period, which is full of these. It's got excellent pubs and bars, restaurants, shops, and things like that. And it's one of the few parts of the city, because the city was actually bombed during the Second World War by the Nazis, and a lot of the city was destroyed. And this is one of the well-preserved areas of that city. I would then also recommend, so just basically following the coastline of the city, it's known as Britain's Ocean City for good reason, mm-hmm. because it all revolves around there. And overlooking that area, you've got what looks like this huge fortress. But what it actually is it's an actively operating Royal Marines and Royal Navy base that's right in the heart of the city. Mm-hmm. And they still have people there, and you can see people training and things. And they actually do tours of there, interestingly. I'm not sure how many military bases you can normally go in and have a tour during the middle of the day, but you can do that.
Well, and it seems like one of the reasons they do that too is you mentioned this is not a new military base. Quite historical. So this is where the ships sailed out to fight the Spanish Armada, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. And the city is very synonymous with Sir Francis Drake, who was the man sure. who mm-hmm. led the defeat of the Spanish Armada. He was from Plymouth. Things like the main shopping centre in the city are named after him. It's called Drake Circus. And you'll find lots of other places around the city named after him. You also have along the Barbican, so along this cobbled medieval street, you have the Plymouth Gin Distillery, which is actually the oldest gin distillery in the country. And of course, you can go in there and you can have tours of that. You can find out how the gin is made. You can find out the botanicals they use. You can then try and sample the different gins at the end of that. So if you're a gin fan, perfect place to go.
Well, and I want to get into a little more detail on all these things so far. So in terms of the Barbican, for instance, you mentioned the Plymouth Gin Distillery and that there are different pubs and things. Do you have a favorite pub? Is there some place that we ought to check out?
There is a place, I feel bad recommending it, but there's a Wetherspoons. Now, Wetherspoons is a national chain across the country. If you live in the UK, you'll know all about Wetherspoons. But they've actually got a really nice rep bar there down on the Barbican, which is right by the Plymouth Gin Distillery. So obviously they've got the gin from there, but they've got a huge selection of other gins and other drinks there. But all the buildings there, because they're old medieval style buildings, that is then become ingrained within the actual pub itself.
Got it.
So I really highly recommend that. There's loads of places down there that I really recommend. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Okay.
You've got a mixture of real new kind of places and then very traditional old pubs as well, which are great.
The only Wetherspoons I've been in is in Heathrow.
Oh, okay. It's quite a bit nicer than the one in Heathrow.
I could picture that
might be. Options as well.
Well, and then you mentioned the tour of the naval base. What are we going to see? How much time does it take?
It's about an hour long, but it gives you an opportunity to go in and just see what a working military base looks like. Not only the history of it, and you get all the background story of how long it's been there for, why it's built in terms of overlooking the harbour and the surrounding oceans. But you can actually just, most people don't really get to go inside a military base and get to see how it operates on a day-to-day basis. And it's really fascinating to be able to go in there and see that and just see the people on their day-to-day, what they're doing, essentially.
Okay.
And sort of where they train and so forth.
So it's more focusing on 2020 than 1500, for instance, if I do the tour.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You've got a mixture of the two things. You've got the history and then you've got the modern day action.
Okay. Excellent. Well, and the one thing we didn't say in terms of geography is what the geography is of Plymouth and why the Navy ended up here. There's a fair amount of coast on England. What's special about Plymouth?
Plymouth, especially in terms of naval history, you've got a very natural kind of harbour that's created, a very deep water harbour. The name Plymouth actually comes from the mouth of the River Plym, which is on the what you'd call the right side of the map, but on the east side. And you've got the River Tamar on the west side. So it's actually split. It's in between two rivers and this huge natural harbour. So it's absolutely ideal for having ships there. And then you've got sort of small islands dotted around and things like that. But the main thing is the water is very deep and well protected. And then, of course, it faces out towards pretty much towards the Atlantic. So it's ideal for then going out to explore and to trade.
Well, and it faces out towards Spain and France that were one of the big reasons that there was a British Navy is that there was usually trouble with one of those two for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, times have changed now and you can now hop on a ferry and you can go and travel to one of those countries from the city. But yeah, it hasn't always been like that.
Yeah, no, now it's Spain that's more at risk from British tourists than
fortunately so.
risk from the Spanish Armada or something.
There's a really fascinating old theatre in Plymouth. Unfortunately, it's closed down, but it's still got this huge, it's called the Armada Theatre, and it's got this huge mural of the Spanish Armada invading the city and the British coast. And it's really fascinating to see. And I noticed it by accident one day, just happening to walk past it and suddenly noticed this amazing artwork on display. It's a shame it's closed down, but it's really fascinating to see.
What else should we do while we're in Plymouth itself before we venture out into the hinterlands?
Plymouth, as I said, it's all about the sea. It's all about the coast. So just following that coastline offers up so many things to see and do. So as you go along the coast, you get to what's called the Hoe. And this is like a long green outdoor park space, but it overlooks the coast. And it's a place where lots of families and groups meet up. People do sports activities. This is where a lot of festivals and events are held. And it's just a really lovely outdoor space. It's also home to what's called the Smeaton's Tower, which is this tall red and white striped lighthouse, which is quite synonymous with the city. And it's also got this place, it's called the Tinside Lido, which is like this outdoor art deco seawater swimming pool, which is right by the coast as well, which is, I think, is really cool. It's great on a sunny day. You'll find loads of people there, and there's loads of diving boards and all sorts of things nearby. Yeah, really nice on a sunny day.
Well, and I suspect one of the reasons that there's a swimming pool here is that the water is a little chilly to go swim in the ocean, which is plentiful in the area.
Yeah, it is quite cold. Quite nice on a sunny day, though. Okay. Refreshing, I would say. But yeah, definitely quite cold.
Well, and you mentioned that the Plymouth Hoe is where a lot of festivals are held, which leads me to the question we often talk about is, what festival should be on my calendar? I should go to Plymouth for what?
So every year they have the National Fireworks Championships that's held there, obviously is very interesting. It's a really cool sight. And of course, you've got the fireworks going off next to Smeaton's Tower. So it makes a really cool backdrop to that. And then the surrounding sea and islands around there as well.
And what day is that, or when is that? I'm assuming it's not 4th of July, because that's when we would have it, but less so in England.
I can't remember the exact day. I should have looked that one up. You have got Bonfire Night, though, which is on the 5th of November.
Yep. Early every August is the British Fireworks Championship.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Any other festivals we should be aware of?
Yes, and it's a relatively new one. I haven't been to it myself, but MTV do a big music festival down there each year. Now, I think it started a couple of years ago. That's usually over the summer, I think around July or August sort of time. I haven't been to it, but I've seen some of the headline acts have usually been pretty good. So that's a good time to go down there. Bonfire Night, though, is the big one.
Yeah, it looks like 2 days in July is when they have typically done the MTV festival.
Yeah, I thought it was July. I was at university in Plymouth, and I remember it being right towards the end of my year.
Excellent. What else? Especially for someone like me who is a history buff, where am I going to see the Navy history in Plymouth?
Okay, so if you carry on following along the coastline, so there's all this history dot along the coastline, you get to a place called the Royal William Yard, which at one point was part of the Royal Navy. It was where ships came, and I believe they used to fill up the ships with all their supplies and things like that. And that's got a lot of history. It's been really well preserved, but over the last decade, they've done a lot of redevelopment work. So now it's also quite a sophisticated place where there's a lot of nice restaurants and bars. They have a lot of outdoor theatre and music and performances. They have art galleries and things. But you've still got all the original listed buildings are there as well. So that's a really fascinating place to go. And also, obviously, you can get great food and drink there as well while you're doing that.
Well, and I understand the official name is the Royal William Victualling Yard. And there's a word in British English that I can't say in American English, because we don't use it as much anymore, more of an archaic word. So the victuals, so this would be where you would resupply the ships.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I can still resupply there.
I didn't try and pronounce that word myself, because it's not one I've come across.
No, that's an archaic word. You have to read a lot of Horatio Hornblower, I think, basically, to get that one.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you know more about that.
I think I have read all the Horatio Hornblower books. So
Where
they're all always coming out of Plymouth and going back to resupply.
Yeah. So if you want to find some more history as well, you can then carry on even further along the coast and you get to a place called Devonport, which used to be, it's the name comes from Devonport, and it was the port where the naval ships were built. And this area has been more redeveloped for housing, but it's still features a lot of the remnants of its past, and it's got a well-marked heritage trail that leads you along to the Navy Heritage Center, and that's got an extensive history of the area and all about the shipbuilding and how that contributed to the Navy. So yeah, another really interesting place to get some history.
Where to next?
I would say that's all the coastline that you followed along. So then I would say going back then into the city center, or what most city centers are, is based around the High Street. So of course you go along the High Street and you've got all the shops there. Lots of different chain stores, lots of different independent stores as well. So you've got Drake Circus, which is the big shopping centre there. Most of it is more to do with the coastline and the sort of naval history, to be honest with you. That's the main draw of Plymouth, I would say.
Excellent. Well, is there anything else you wanted to cover in Plymouth, or is it time to head out of town?
I'd say it's probably time to head out of town, yeah.
Excellent. Where are we going out of town?
So I'd say the first place outside of Plymouth that you want to go to is Dartmoor National Park. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful, very wild kind of place. It's one of the first places to be declared national park in the UK. If you're into Sherlock Holmes and you've read the stories there, then The Hounds of the Baskerville is based in Dartmoor as well.
Right. Okay.
And it's also a place very infamous for its prison, because the place is very wild and very remote. They built a prison there, and that was around the time of the Napoleonic Wars. It was built there, but then also used during the American Independence War against England a lot of the captured soldiers.
We call that something else, but that's...
Sorry. I probably absolutely butchered that, so...
No, that's all right. You could call it something different. Yeah. We understand. the War of the American Rebellion, you know.
Yes. But anyway, a lot of the captured people from that war were then brought back, and they were brought to Plymouth and then marched up to the prison in Dartmoor. And it's got quite almost a bit of an ominous background to it, but it's also, at the same time, it is beautiful, it's lovely, and there's lots of lovely, very old, very traditional villages in Devon. That they're just beautiful places. They're lovely places to go to, and it's like stepping back in time, and you can just see these little farming communities and how they used to live. And yeah, so it's really lovely, really nice for a day's walk.
Do you have a particular one you would recommend?
It's a bit difficult for me because I come from the north of Devon, so when I come down, I'm coming to the top of Dartmoor, but it's a wide area. So if you're coming from Plymouth, you'd probably be coming from the south of Plymouth. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are a lot of different places. I'd say Okehampton is one. It's a small town that's right on there, and that's a good place to base yourself. But there are so many different places that you can go to. Mm-hmm. It's hard to really pick one. When you're in secondary school in Devon, there's a big thing, particularly when you're sort of 15 to 16 years old, there's a thing called the 10 Tors. And the Tors are another word for the small hills in Dartmoor. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is either 35, 45 or 55 miles. And you've got to walk up and down these 10 Tors or 10 hills, covering that distance on a set map.
Well, and the fact that the hills there are tours actually brings up one of the things that makes this region a little different is this was a traditionally Celtic-speaking region, and tour being the word for hill in Celtic. Although, as I recall, in this area, the language really hasn't sustained. I'm not really going to run into people speaking Celtic as I will if I go over to the western coast of Ireland, but this was, for a long time, where the Angles and the Saxons didn't end up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever heard anybody speaking any Celtic language.
No, I think
around
it is,
the area.
It's not that it's completely gone, but it's not practiced in daily life.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so Dartmoor, really beautiful area, really highly recommended. You'd probably need a car to get there because it is quite remote. There are a number of buses, there are a number of trains that go around. But if you want to get into the heart of there, you'd probably need either a car or you could cycle, actually. Cycling is a very good option. I know a lot of people who cycle around the area because the roads are, you've got these nice country roads. It's quite remote. There's not a lot of traffic and the scenery is beautiful. So it's ideal for cycling. Because Plymouth is right on the border between Devon and Cornwall, I would really highly recommend actually going to Cornwall. And from Plymouth, there are a number of ferries that go to different places. And one of them is this little village. It's called Corsands, which is in Cornwall, and it's a little fishing village pretty much, and the ferry comes up to the shore there, and it's this beautiful place. Cornwall's famous for its, not only its beaches that are really beautiful, but its small fishing communities. Mm-hmm. And this is a prime example of one, and it's really easy, it's cheap to just hop on the ferry from the city and go and spend the day there. But of course, being on the border of Devon and Cornwall, you have both sides of things, so it's slightly there are slight differences between the villages in Devon and the ones in Cornwall. I think Cornwall's maybe a little bit more rugged, whereas Devon's got more, it's more gentle sort of hills. It's a little bit greener, I would say. So there's a bit of a difference between the two. But yeah, you've got access to all these different fishing villages. You've got access to all these surfing kind of villages as well, because surfing is hugely popular. And they make nice days out. You can find out about the history of those fishing communities and how they used to live, or you can just go and relax on the beach and have a nice day.
Well, you say that known for its fishing, the two big industries historically were the fishing and the mining.
Yeah, absolutely. So I haven't mentioned the mining. Yep. And the mining, I think, tended to happen in Cornwall along the mining coast, which is a little further west. So if you have a car or if you want to catch a train, because trains go down that way, then yeah, you could certainly reach the tin mining communities as well, which again is absolutely fascinating and has a whole history in itself and is really beautiful. If you see the old tin mines along the coastline there, it's a really beautiful scenery.
Well, and the other thing is, if you're in the area, if you're in Cornwall, you've got to grab a pasty, which you can find all throughout England, but it comes from this region, and it comes from this region because that crust that you is basically what you hold on to. And if you're a tin miner and you've got this in your lunch and you've been tin mining all day, you throw away the crust because that crust is contaminated with your tin-covered hand. So it gave you a way to basically eat your lunch and not poison yourself with eating a lot of tin.
Yeah, and do you know, I absolutely love Cornish pasties. I don't know why that is. As soon as it gets to summer and the sun comes out, it's all I want to eat is Cornish pasties. They're absolutely amazing. And I love, so in Plymouth, there's a couple of places. There's a place called Oggy Oggy Pasties, and they do great pasties. But the name actually, and people for some reason shout it during football, what you call soccer matches.
Wow. But why people do shout, they
Oggy,
shout
Oggy Oggy Oggy, oi, oi, oi. But that apparently comes from the tin mining communities, and sort of the miners' wives would shout down to the mine, shout, Oggy, 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 and the tin miners would reply, Oi, 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 as a sort of response to say that they've heard them, they're on their way.
Huh. Okay. You said two pasty places. One was Oggy Oggy, and what was the other one?
Oh, no, sorry. It's the same company. They've got two or three places.
Oh, got
Plymouth.
It. Okay. Excellent.
Highly recommended.
Where else do we want to go in Plymouth or Devon or Cornwall?
So we've got Dartmoor, which, of course, is the national park that I really highly recommend seeing. I recommend either you can either go around Devon or you can go around Cornwall, because Plymouth is based right on the border between the two. You've sort of got very good access to them. And I would say just go and exploring the coastline. Devon and Cornwall is very much about its coastline. Mm-hmm. One of the best parts about it, actually, and this covers the whole of the southwest, but you have the Southwest Coastal Path, which is over 600 miles of coastal path, footpaths that follow around the entire southwest coastline, passing through Plymouth. So you can go for a walk starting from Plymouth, or you can catch a train or a bus to another starting point. You can drive there, and you can just follow the coastal paths from one village to another or to a town and different places, and you follow the coastline along there. So some of it's quite flat, where you've got the nice sandy beaches. Other parts will be quite rugged, where you've got these, where it's like cliffs going into the sea. Mm-hmm. And some parts can be very steep, some parts not so much. And it just makes for a very varied walk as you go along, and it's beautiful. There's lots of nature there. There's areas of outstanding natural beauty in the area, so there's a lot to take in as you go out for a nice day, go for nice walks along the coastline. As I said, this is a place where a lot of people from England and the rest of the UK come on holiday for this specific coastline.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about the coastline path, because just a couple months ago we talked about the South Downs and the coastal path there. This is completely separate, although you could do them both together if you have time. But yeah. That's a lot of time, and really
like to be very hard pressed over 600 miles just on the southwest coastal path. So you'd have to have a lot of endurance for that.
Exactly, but that one we talked about was predominantly just in the national park. Where here, there's a lot of different parks along the coast, but you're also then going through private land. And that's a little different in England than it is, for instance, here where I am in the U.S., private land is big gates, don't trespass, and things like that.
Yeah.
You've got different rules that we've got.
As far as I'm aware, in England, we have public rights of way, which have been established for hundreds of years now, for one reason or another. Yeah, so the government have recently made an effort to record all of these public right-of-ways, regardless of whether they go through private land or public land, to keep a record of it, because over time, people are forgetting about them. Some of them aren't being used. So yeah, there's this effort to preserve them, because legally, you can, if it's a public right-of-way, you can walk there regardless of where it is, and no one can tell you that you can't. And I didn't realize that wasn't a thing in the USA, actually, until quite recently.
Nor in many other countries, but yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's a big incentive to protect these, because what if you don't protect it and it's not recorded, then potentially you lose it. So yeah, the Southwest Coastal Path makes use of all of those. So some of it will go through farmland, some of it will go along public coastline, some of it is areas protected by what's called the National Trust that we have here in the UK, which preserves and protects lots of outdoor space and areas. So there's a whole variety of them. Some of them, actually, I've walked along some of the coastal paths, and you would barely even know they're there. They're so small and so remote, and they follow all along these remote areas. And then others are through the middle of towns and villages, and it's well built up and well paved.
Well, and if we didn't have time to hike 600 miles, which is going to be true for some of us, do you have a particularly favorite part of the coastal path?
I'm biased. I say North Devon, but we'll stick to South Devon because that's closer to where Plymouth is. It's really hard to say because they're all such nice places. I try and make a point of going out as often as I can at weekends and things like that, and holidays, to go out and just walk parts of these paths. And quite often I'll walk from one village to another, and then you can stop at a pub and get a drink along the way.
If you were to say North Devon, where would you say?
See, I'm better with saying it for North Devon. I've lived in North Devon a lot longer than I lived in Plymouth.
Well, and let's be clear, North Devon from South Devon is 50 miles away or something like that?
Yeah, it's maybe about an hour or two drive.
Okay.
So it's, when I say North Devon, I think of it as a faraway place, but actually it's not at all. It's still very much in Devon. For me, I'm from Woolacombe, which anyone in the UK will know. It's one of the top-rated places in the UK to go. It's got a beautiful beach that's about 2 to 3 miles long, just pure sand, absolutely gorgeous. And it's got sand dunes along the top. And that, for me, I'm biased because it's from where I'm from, but it is just an absolutely beautiful place to go. And anyone who's been there will know it's beautiful. And then you've got such a contrast. So if you go slightly further along the coast, you get to a place called Morthoe, which is a small village. And that's very different. It's very rugged. There's a lot of cliff faces. You've got Moor Point, which sticks right out. And it's quite infamous for being a place where there's shipwreckers who would encourage ships to crash on that coast. And then they would go and rob all the contents of the ships. So, again, very fascinating in contrast of histories and geography. But yeah, that's where I'd recommend the most.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you look at coastal cities like that, there are places like that all over the world where people made their living basically from the bad waters. In the U.S., I think of Key West in Florida, for instance, where people made a living from shipwrecks, which seems like an odd thing to do. Excellent. Anything else we want to cover that you really think you ought to see while you're down near Plymouth or in Devon and Cornwall? Exmoor is actually out of Cornwall, right? Oh, Devon, rather.
No, so Exmoor is part of, it's in North, it stretches across Devon and then into Somerset.
Okay, did we want to mention Exmoor as long as we're talking about national parks?
Yeah. So from North Devon, part of North Devon and the coastline along the Bristol Channel, which is the north part, you have Exmoor, and part of that is in North Devon and it stretches across into neighbouring county of Somerset. And again, this is another national park like Dartmoor. Mm-hmm. So Devon's quite lucky. It's got two large national parks. You've got Dartmoor in the south.
And there's only 15 in the UK total, so two is pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely. And Exmoor is more the north part of Devon stretching into Somerset. It's not quite as rugged. It's not quite as barren as Dartmoor is. It's quite famous. It's got Exmoor ponies, which are from there, which are these slightly smaller than usual horses, but they're really beautiful. And actually, I think the numbers of them have been declining. So people are making a point of protecting these because they are lovely horses.
Oh, they wild horses? Or
yeah, they're wild out on the moors there. I think people do have some of their own. They breed them and things like that. But yeah, they are. You still see them if you go out for walks on Exmoor, these wild horses there, which is, it's a nice thing to see.
Well, and the concept of a moor is something that I think is not something we use here as much in a word in American English. When I say Exmoor and Dartmoor and we say they are moors, what is a moor?
Good question. Do you know, I've never really thought about it. I've just been brought up with the idea of having Exmoor and Dartmoor, and I've never really questioned what a moor actually is. To me, it's just a large outdoor space that's quite hilly, but I actually don't know.
Well, a dictionary.com says a tract of open, peaty wasteland, often overgrown with heather in high altitudes, common with in high altitudes, or a tract of land preserved for game.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can certainly associate it with the high lands and the hills. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly lots of heather that grows around there. But I don't know about wasteland. I think they're wonderful.
Well, I think wasteland versus arable land, places where you didn't want to plant your crops.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, I suppose that could be right.
Yeah, wasteland is from a commercial point of view, I think.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite places in the world are wasteland by that definition.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, if there's nothing else that you want to cover in your itinerary, then let's get to some of our wrap-up questions.
Yeah, okay.
You're standing in the prettiest spot, let's say Devon and Cornwall. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
First of all, I'll say in Plymouth, it would probably be stood on the Hoe. So this is that big green outdoor space where out in front of you, you have the sea, you've got the harbour, you can see the ships coming in and out. Some of them are fishing boats, some of them are ferries, some of them are naval ships. You've got what's called Drake's Island just out in front of you. And it's just a beautiful scenery, especially on a sunny day. If you're in the right place, you can see the Tinside Lido just below you, which is that outdoor swimming pool. In terms of Devon, for me, it's Woolacombe. And again, that's probably because I'm biased, but the beach is just beautiful. There are other beaches like that you can see dotted all around Cornwall and all around Devon. Newquay is very popular with surfing and nice beaches as well, but Woolacombe is the main one for me.
Well, and I get the impression that there are more sandy beaches on the northern part of Devon and Cornwall. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, I believe so, actually. Yeah, if okay. I was to think about it, as I say, North Devon and the north coast of Cornwall is particularly associated with surfing, whereas the south coast is more associated with sort of, you've got what's called the English Riviera, though I'm not sure if I'd go to that extent describing it as that. But you have, it's more pebbly beaches down that way.
Okay.
And you've also got the Jurassic Coast, which is where they often find dinosaur bones and things like that.
Oh, yeah. We didn't put the Jurassic Coast on the map. That is something that we should mention. And I can't put it on the map personally. I know it's down there, but I don't know where.
The Jurassic Coast, as it's known, it stretches a bit of an area. So it's not just one part, but it stretches from the south coast of Devon across to the coast of Dorset, which are both on the south coast of England.
Okay.
Yeah, and it covers a large area. Lyme Regis is a very nice part of Devon if you want to go there, which is along the Jurassic Coast or very close to it.
And you mentioned that there are a lot of fossils that have been found there, obviously from, I think we could guess what period. Is there a particular place where you can see those displayed, the things that were found in the Jurassic Coast?
I believe Lyme Regis is a place I've been to before in the past, and I'm fairly sure it was where there was a lady who first discovered them there, was along that coastline, Lyme Regis.
Excellent. And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Devon and Cornwall.
If you are from Plymouth and you're a Plymouth native, then you're known as a Janna. When I first went to university there, I heard people saying I had absolutely no idea what that meant. And it took quite a long time to find out from a friend of mine who lived there. But yeah, so if you hear anyone being referred to as a Janna, then that's someone who's from Plymouth. The other funny thing is tourists to Devon and Cornwall in the southwest are often referred to as grockles. So if you hear somebody calling you a grockle, that means they're referring to you as a tourist. It's not necessarily the most polite way, even though people from Devon and Cornwall are very friendly. But yeah, grockle is a word for tourists.
Now, my understanding is when it comes to local accents, the Devon and Cornwall might be a little more tough for me to understand what somebody is saying, even when they are speaking English.
Yeah, that can be the case. I find it very endearing when I hear it, and it's an accent I really miss when I'm not in the area. And it's quite similar to Bristolian as well. It's a very southwesterly kind of accent, but yeah, it can be quite thick and quite hard to understand sometimes.
Excellent. Well, and we mentioned actually food. We mentioned getting a pasty while you're there, although I don't know if you have a particular, you recommended where we should go, but you didn't recommend if there was a favorite pasty that's good.
Oh, it's got to be a Cornish pasty. That is just the traditional one. That's the one that's steak, potatoes and swede, a bit of salt and pepper.
Okay.
And it sounds basic, but it's wonderful.
Excellent. And is there other things that we should try while we're in the area?
Absolutely. A cream tea, or Devonshire tea as it's called, is probably the best thing that I recommend you to try. It's four parts. So you've got what's either a scone or a scone, depending how you want to pronounce it. I was brought up calling it a scone, but I tend to hear more people call it a scone, so I refer to it as that. A little bit of controversy over that. And that's a basic sort of cake. It's butter, flour, sugar, and milk mixed together. But it's that in itself is nice as it is. But the best part is you then have clotted cream, which also comes from Cornwall, can only come from Cornwall. It's sort of copyrighted.
Oh.
And that's like a really thick and really rich cream. You don't get it anywhere else, but yeah, really dense, really rich. And then you tend to have strawberry jam or raspberry jam. You can have some alternatives, but they're the main ones. The biggest controversy comes over whether you put the clotted cream or the jam on top first. And this causes huge arguments, particularly this is like a Devon and Cornwall divide. The Devonshire way is to put the clotted cream on first and then you spread the jam. The Cornish way is the other way, it's jam first. And yeah, I've seen arguments over this about the right way of doing it.
So you said that Devon and Cornwall were separated by a river, but they're really separated by by clotted cream.
Yeah, this
cream
is the biggest historic divide between the two counties about whether it's cream or jam first.
That's
being
funny.
From Devon, I would say cream first, but also I would argue that the cream is a lot denser and thicker than the jam, so it's easier to put the jam on afterwards. But yeah, highly recommended that. And then obviously it's called a cream tea and you have it with a cup of tea. That's a brilliant thing. You have that particularly on a nice sunny day, sit out in a nice garden or outdoor somewhere, and it's absolutely lovely. The other thing I recommend, being a classic English tradition, is fish and chips, particularly if you're down by the coast and if you're in Plymouth, where it's got a working fishing harbour. absolutely the place to get fish and chips. You get fresh fish caught that day. And yeah, it's brilliant. If you haven't tried it before, I really recommend it. And then the other thing, which I think, I don't think it matters which country or where you are actually, but is ice cream. Ice cream and the beach, the two things to me, they go together. And there's some really nice, both fish and chip shops and ice cream places in the Barbican, which is in Bristol down by the harbour. So I really highly recommend those.
Excellent. One thing I forgot to mention is there are a few UNESCO World Heritage Sites in the area. One would be the Cornwall and Devon mining landscape. We mentioned the mines,
yeah,
which I think includes at least one good mining museum down there. The yeah. North Devon Biosphere
yeah.
is a UNESCO site, as well as the...
The one in North Devon would be the Braunton Burrows, which is right by the village of Braunton, which is sort of almost the gateway to get to Wollacombe, to get to Croyd and Saunton. These are all wonderful beaches if you're in the North Devon area. And yeah, that again, it's like sand dunes that covers several miles, but it's just a really well protected and preserved area.
Excellent. And the last question, if you had to summarize Plymouth, Devon and Cornwall in just three words, what three words would you use?
Beaches, beauty, and tradition.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Ryan Duffield. And Ryan, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for this little corner of England.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
In news of the community, first I'd like to send out thanks to all the patrons of the show who are helping support Amateur Traveler, especially to our newest patron, Antonia. I'm going to give a try at your last name, Tanya Adonizio. And thanks to all the patrons of the show. One phrase that gives me the most joy to say is, I did not know that. And that's what I had to say when Jeff Ulfs sent me a story about Paraguay and probably their most famous U.S. president, Rutherford B. Hayes. There are cities in Paraguay named after Rutherford B. Hayes and regions, and the reason for that is Paraguay fought a costly war against Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay, and they asked the U.S. president, Rutherford B. Hayes, to arbitrate the truce, and a great portion of the amount of land in Paraguay was decided to be theirs by President Rutherford B. Hayes. I did not know that. I heard from Steve, who said, hi, Chris, I just listened to the Travel to Bosnia podcast and enjoyed it as always. Thanks for keeping them coming. I really enjoyed the note from the young travelers who have been traveling since they recently married. I'm glad to hear that young people are listening to your podcasts. My wife and I have been traveling since the day we married. We drove from Southern California and honeymooned in Vancouver and Victoria, British Columbia. We've been traveling ever since. That's 52 years. We can't wait to go again. We've traveled to every continent, including Antarctica. We've made friends all over the world. It has been good to keep in contact with them and to update each other as we sit out the pandemic. It also helps to really find out what's happening since the U.S. media is so screwed up. It's so important to understand other cultures and to enjoy the things that they do with them. It is also great to spend time with people and understand that they have the same concerns as all of us, namely, how do I make a living, how do I feed my family, and how do I help my children succeed? Stay safe, Steve. Thanks so much, Steve, and congratulations on 52 wonderful years of traveling, but more importantly, on marriage. Yeah, not only do we have younger people listening to the show, but we also have people now who've been listening for 15 years. And every once in a while, I get somebody saying, I've been listening to you for 15 years since I was in high school or something like that, who is no longer quite as young, but we've been around for a while now. By the time you hear this, we will have celebrated 15 years. This will be the 15-year anniversary episode of the show. And thanks so much for all of you for listening, whether it be for a day, a week, a month, a year, or all 15. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any comments on this or any episode of Amateur Traveler, send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And we'll end this show as we have ended, I think, almost all of them, with my thanks so much for listening. One more cathedral, I got to sit in